The following is an encore presentation of Access Utah. However, you can still participate in this conversation at upraccess@gmail.com.
Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough, and today on the show, we're looking at the friction between Governor Gary Herbert and the Utah legislature over the pending special election to replace Representative Jason Chaffetz. Chaffetz announced yesterday that his departure from Congress will happen at the end of June. Also, who's in the running to replace him? Plus, with a White House in turmoil and a special counsel appointed to look at the Trump campaign's ties to Russia, John Huntsman Jr.'s ambassadorship to that country is still up in the air. But for how much longer? And a clause in Utah's new alcohol law that disproportionately affects new immigrants. Those stories, your underplayed stories of the week, and more just ahead on Behind the Headlines here on Utah Public Radio. Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW, heard around the state on Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, and today on the show, Representative Jason Chaffetz says he'll leave Congress on June 30th, but there's a battle brewing over how the election to replace him will play out. Also, a special counsel is appointed to look at the Trump administration's ties to Russia. What does that mean for the pending nomination of John Huntsman Jr. as ambassador to that country? Those and other stories on the docket today. And joining us on the phone is Salt Lake Tribune Washington Bureau Chief Thomas Berg. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning.
And in studio, we've got government editor Dan Harry. Dan, welcome. Thanks for being
here. Good morning, Roger.
And Salt Lake Tribune's, from the Salt Lake Tribune's editorial board, making her debut on the show, Michelle Quist. Michelle, welcome, and thank you for being here as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Listeners, you can join this conversation as well. This is our Friday morning news wrap-up. You can post your questions and comments at sltrib.com or call us at 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. Let's start today with the news that Jason Chaffetz has given his exit date. He'll leave Congress on June 30th, and yesterday he delivered, I think, a letter to Governor Gary Herbert, which should kickstart some of the special election process, and we'll get to more on that in just a little bit. But Thomas Burr, Chaffetz is getting out at an interesting and some might even say a convenient time, and that is, of course, because of his chairmanship on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee and what's happening in Washington.
Yeah. It is interesting timing. Chaffetz told us, a month ago that he was planning to not run for anything in 2018, and that he would step down early. We didn't know when. We thought maybe late May or June. Now he says for sure it's going to be June 30th. He delivered that very short letter to the governor saying that he's resigning his position. And then in a letter to constituents, he kind of explains why, and he talked to the news media yesterday. But this all comes at a very delicate time. He's just requested the former FBI director come and testify before the House Oversight Committee. He's requested any documents that the Justice Department may have discerning discussing the comments between or the conversations between James Comey and President Trump. And he's pretty much not going to be able to see that through. I mean, there may be a hearing next week if Comey responds, but those kind of investigations are not wrapped up in a few weeks. So really, he's leaving amid, a very, very fascinating time in Washington.
Yeah. So, like you said, that this isn't going to be enough time for him to see these investigations through. June 30th isn't long enough for that. Will Chaffetz remain the chair of the House Oversight Committee through his departure?
He's saying he will. He doesn't want to step down from that role. He still has a few things he wants to wrap up. But it's interesting because a lot of Republicans are trying to force him out in many ways. They're saying if he's already a lame duck, it's better to have somebody like Trey Gowdy from South Carolina in that position rather than somebody who's going to be leading Congress. So it will be something to watch, I guess, if Chaffetz decides to stay and everyone else wants him to leave, if he kind of bows to the pressure.
You know, just straying away from the story of Chaffetz's departure for a minute, let's talk about those recent developments in Washington, and you mentioned some of them already, but after Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, Comey came out and said that Trump had requested a loyalty oath from him, and then this is sort of the crucial part, that Trump, in a private meeting, had asked him to drop the FBI's investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, recognizing some sort of malfeasance, I guess, or whatever it is. And Comey started documenting all of this in a journal, Tommy, and that's what you were talking about that Chaffetz had requested.
Yeah, you got it. We should be careful here. Actually, it's not Comey saying it necessarily, at least to my knowledge, it's not Comey saying it. It's essentially other people who were around Comey, his associates or friends, who have seen the memo that he wrote. And yes, it's been quite a week in Washington. All of us here are just around 5, 6 p.m. just kind of waiting for Washington Post or the New York Times to break some big news about what's going on at the White House. But yes, so you nailed it pretty well there. The memo is the most interesting part to come out this week. Essentially, those who've seen it said that Comey left the White House meeting, which he found very awkward and was nervous about, and then wrote a memo essentially saying that the president was very, very, very forefront in asking him to stop the investigation of Michael Flynn. If that's true, and if there's any documentation backing up, that could lead to questions about obstruction of justice. If the sitting president of the United States is trying to urge the FBI not to investigate somebody for a crime, that's getting into this kind of Nixonian territory.
Okay. So obstruction of justice. And I actually want to throw this to our editorial writer here in studio with us, Michelle Quist. And you were somebody who can opine on the facts here. Michelle, is this the beginning of a great unraveling of the Trump presidency? I know it's kind of a big question for your debut on the show, but what are we seeing here?
Well, these are big issues. Malfeas, as you mentioned. It could be. It could be the unraveling of the Trump presidency. It certainly doesn't look good for him. The important thing is that we need to keep looking. We need to investigate, and have the hearings. We need to read the memos. We need to be thorough on that. And the credibility of the government agencies and of our law enforcement agencies depends on that.
Tommy, Trump disputes Comey's account altogether when it comes to the idea that that he had asked him to shut down this investigation, correct?
Absolutely. In the news conference yesterday, Trump was asked, did you in any way ask, Comey to stop this? His response was no, next question. The White House has denied it as well. Interestingly, the White House statements are coming out, and they're coming out without any name attached to them, just from the White House. No one apparently wants to put their name on these statements. This is something, though, that I think is very clear in Washington. You don't pick on the FBI. They're a pretty independent organization, and they're ready. They go to court all the time and testify about things like this. So these documents, if they exist, if this memo exists, for example, could literally be a document used in court. I think Michelle's a lawyer. She would know that these are documents that could be cited as evidence.
There's also I've heard through the week's reporting of some other evidence of obstruction of justice. And again, this has to do with the president's firing of Comey. In an NBC interview, Trump said that the Russia investigation was on his mind when he fired Comey. And that in and of itself, some have pointed to and said, this right here is evidence of obstruction of justice.
It's one of those things you have to keep looking at. Like, the president needs to stop talking about this stuff, at least have a lawyer tell him to stop talking about this stuff. The more he says things like that, the more danger he could get into. Because if you're actually admitting publicly that you were thinking about the Russia probe when you fired somebody investigating you for the contacts with Russia, that draws a clear line.
I want to send a quick reminder to listeners that you are invited to join this conversation. The number to call is 801-355-8255, or you can comment at sltrib.com. And I'd like to actually circle back around now to the announcement by Jason Chaffetz that he's out at the end of June and talk to Michelle here about that. I brought this up in the beginning of the show, but it can seem like a kind of convenient time for a Republican with future political ambitions, who also happens to be the chair of the committee that would look into some of these questions, a convenient time for him to get out of Dodge.
Well, it's so much wasted opportunity. I mean, he for months punted on all of these on all things related to Trump and Russia. And then now that he finally has asked for an investigation to start, he steps out, and it's very convenient for him to be able to say, I started the investigations and I was just, it was time for me to leave. So, he washes his hands of it.
Tommy, just as a sort of delve into what Chaffetz is thinking, what is the reason that Chaffetz has given for his leaving?
His public reason is that he's just kind of tired of flying back and forth, sleeping on a cot, being away from his family, that he didn't want to be in Congress for the rest of his life, but he's always promised to be, you know, get in and get out. He's now serving his fifth term. And that's you know, exactly what he said yesterday in his letter to constituents and to the media at his home. The other side to that, though, is that he's been in this most untenable spot. Like Michelle was talking about, the idea of being in Trump alienates him from, you know, the White House. He has the core Republicans that will be upset with him for investigating the president, as the president calls it, a witch hunt. On the other side, if he doesn't do anything, as we've seen at that town hall with his, people are really upset with him for not doing his job. So there's just really no way to win if he stays in this position.
I know that also in interviews yesterday, he said essentially that he couldn't afford to maintain homes in both D.C. and Utah, and that he couldn't financially essentially manage that on his congressman's salary, which was kind of an interesting moment.
Yeah, they're paid $170,000, $174,000, something like that. So I think Dan can tell you he makes slightly more than I do. So that's always an interesting argument.
Dan, Tommy's pushing for a raise. I can hear it right there.
That's no surprise.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're barely beginning to scratch the surface of all of this, but we do need to go to a break. Still ahead on the program, the governor and the legislature have a different reading on how the special election to replace Representative Chaffetz will be managed. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. We'll be back in a moment. The headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW, and I'm joined by Salt Lake Tribune Washington Bureau Chief Thomas Burr, government editor Dan Harry, and the Tribune editorial writer Michelle Quist. We're talking about this week's past local headlines. You can join us with your comments and questions by calling 801-355-TALK or commenting at sltrib.com or KCPW's Facebook page. Before we left, we were unpacking what has been happening in Washington and the interesting timing of Jason Chaffetz's departure from Congress, and I'd like to turn now to what is going to happen in the wake of the congressman's early departure. And Dan Harry, there is a divide over how the election to replace Chaffetz should happen. That divide is between the governor and the legislature. Both sides say that they have the law, the Constitution backing them up. Can you lay this out for us? And I understand that there's actually a timeline of how the special election might take place from the governor's office.
Right. Well, the legislature is very upset right now because the governor will not agree to call them into special session to set the specific rules of the special election. All the state law says is the governor will, you know, proclaim a special election. That's all it says. So that gives the governor tremendous flexibility about how it's run. He says that he will mirror the regular election process, but the difference is it's got to be conducted on a very abbreviated time frame. There are federal laws that say you have to have your ballots out to overseas and military 45 days before the primary. That means if you back that up, and Gerke has a column, Robert Gerke's column on laying this out now is posted on the Tribune website if you want to take a look at it, and there will be a news conference later today to lay this out. But that means they're going to start to have candidates filing next week. They're going to have the field of candidates in place by June 30th, which coincidentally is the day that Jason Chaffetz steps down. It's actually not a coincidence because the governor can't call a special election to fill a vacancy until the seat is vacant. And that's why he coordinated with the governor's office to say this is going to be the June 30th is the day that the governor will call that special election.
But candidate filings, the sort of nuts and bolts of how the election will play out are beginning to start right now.
Next week.
And if you were on the fence before, now is the time to make your decision.
Right.
The legislature, though, was telling the governor that he should call a special session of the lawmakers. And the governor says no to that, that he's got the authority and the, the sort of structure in place to do this.
Right.
As a body, they can't have a special session, of course, unless the governor calls them into session. So I guess what's going to happen from the legislature's perspective? They've threatened to sue.
There's also, talk of retaliation in other ways. There's a Republican state convention Saturday where some believe that the delegates and the Republican Party insiders are going to display their displeasure with the governor. But in the end, really, there's nothing they can do unless they take the governor to court. He has sole authority to call a special session. So really, they can make a great deal of sound and fury, but there's nothing they can do about it.
Signifying what? So the Tribune article that Lee Davidson wrote on this, it says that what's really at play here is who is going to get to decide who replaces Chaffetz, or it kind of hints at that anyways. And some of this also echoes the election law reform that took mm-hmm. place a couple of years ago, the Count My Vote law, mm-hmm. That the Utah Republican Party wasn't in favor of. Mm-hmm. The governor, through the normal election process, is allowing candidates to get on the ballot by collecting signatures, which is the law.
And that will be very abbreviated as well. There will be only 18 days for people to gather 7,000 signatures to get on a primary ballot.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I think there will be some that would be able to do that, but that's very tough. The legislators are complaining that saying none of that timeline is in the state law, and that's where the governor is running afoul of the law, they say, because he's making up these rules with no, you know, statutory authority. The governor points again to that very broad authorization law and says that gives him the authority to set these rules.
Well, so state law says simply that the governor shall call a special election. That doesn't jive exactly with federal law. And Speaker of the House Greg Hughes says that the legislature the governor is breaking, essentially going against the U.S. Constitution by doing this. If they do file a lawsuit, how will that put a delay on the process that the governor's announcing today?
That's one of the questions that surrounds that issue. Normally something like that would go directly to the state Supreme Court on a very expedited nature, because the justices are always aware that they don't want to have the court delay affect an election. And so they would put that on an expedited process and try to get a ruling out.
Hmm. I guess I'm wondering, maybe I don't really understand the nature of the division between the legislature and the governor here. The lawmaker, essentially what the governor's doing different from election law is expediting it, making
yes.
it happen under a quicker time
right.
frame, and that is the objection from
right.
the legislature.
Right.
Okay.
Well, no, the objection from the legislature is they want to be in charge of it. They see it as a separation of powers issue. It's the, you know, our government is set up on kind of this basis of checks and balances, and that's what they're asserting here, is that this is a legislative duty. They should play a role in it. Mm-hmm. The governor's not saying, well, he is saying this outright, I guess. The fear is they're just going to send this issue to the convention and let delegates decide. So essentially you'd have about 1,000 Republican delegates decide who our next congressperson is going to be.
Well, decide who would be the candidate from
no.
the Republican side? No.
No, there are some who just simply want the delegates to choose the replacement.
Hmm. Michelle Quist, editorial writer, who is in the right here? And maybe you could shine a light on why there is this division between, I guess Dan's done that pretty well. Who's right?
Well, I think the governor is good to hold his ground. There are clear definitions in the law of what an election is, what a special election is, and what a general election is. The Utah law says that a special election goes by the same process as a general election. Hmm. And he's arguing that the lieutenant governor has the right to do elections. And just because it's expedited, we think that it, that still makes sense. It's too late in the process to make changes now. It just smells funny if you go in and make changes to an election process that has already started. It just smells funny.
Historically, have we seen, the sort of rarity of this is the fact that we don't see offices or congresspeople vacating their offices very frequently. Is there a historical precedent, Dan?
Well, we had a congressman die in office midterm in 1929, and they did use just sort of the normal process, the seat stayed vacant for a number of months, but then they did hold an election in which they elected the successor to fill out the remainder of the term and then also a full two-year term after that.
Will there be both a party primary and a general election in this special
process? Under the governor's plan, there will be.
And so, I mean, this means candidates from both parties, or conceivably from other parties as well, could get into the mix.
Correct.
You know, yeah, I don't know. There's been some suggestion from the governor, I think, that that some lawmakers might want to make the rules to their own benefit, that they can more easily win this nomination and therefore this seat, conceivably, if they can control the rules. Is there evidence for that?
When the governor first made that comment, Greg Hughes was in the mix, the House Speaker, as a possible candidate. And, you know, that was a suspicion that you would be – the legislature would be in control of an election process which could benefit not only the speaker at that time but others who had expressed interest in running for the seat. And so that's the fear here. And, you know, if they did go to the process where state party delegates would decide who the replacement was, that would tend to benefit legislators because they're well known inside the party. You know, these are their friends. These are people who have voted for them before. So they would have an advantage in that regard.
A quick reminder to listeners that we want to hear your thoughts on these stories. Call us at 801-355-8255 or comment at sltrib.com or on KCPW's Facebook page. You know, we haven't even really begun to touch on those people who have expressed interest in this seat. I know we have we have one candidate on the Democratic side who was planning on challenging Jason Chaffetz in next year's election. This is Catherine Allen. And she already has a kind of fundraising head start.
Well, she got a huge fundraising boost. She's really a political unknown, but she got a huge fundraising boost when Congressman Chaffetz made his now infamous comment about health care, that low-income folks might have to choose between buying that new iPhone or purchasing health care coverage. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge backlash over that. And so out of nowhere, these donations started streaming into her, mainly from, you know, outside of Utah, but from all over the country. And she raised about $400,000 in a matter of hours.
That is pretty quick. There's also, I know, another sort of pending Democratic announcement from Carl Ingwell, who is a climate activist here in town, who says that he's going to throw his name in. How about on the Republican side? Have we had anybody say, absolutely, I am in?
No one has said that, absolutely, I am in, but we may hear one of those today. Deidre Henderson, who is a state senator from Spanish Fork, very well known and actually has been allies with Jason Chaffetz in the past, is expected to make some sort of announcement about getting in. Provo Mayor John Curtis, who had already announced he would not seek another term, yesterday was tweeting up a storm about this seems more and more the right thing to do. And then when Tommy called him to ask whether he was definitely in, he sort of softballed it a little. But it sounds like he's going to run, too.
He's gearing up. There are others.
Several legislators that have talked about it. Dan McKay has talked about it. Brad Daw, his name has been thrown out there. Several others.
I want to bring Tommy Byrne.
Margaret Dayton actually started a Twitter account, Dayton for Congress. So I think that kind of signals she's in as well.
Okay.
In some ways, it all might be easier to name the people who are not running.
Tommy, has Chaffetz said anything about who he'd like to see replace him? I mean, I know we know that Senator Orrin Hatch has said he might step aside for Mitt Romney. Is there any kind of handoff going on here?
No. In fact, I think Chaffetz has been pretty clear that does not want to, you know, anoint somebody to take his seat like it's somehow his to hand over. Although I think a close favorite of his would be Deidre
Henderson,
because she used to work for him and they've known each other for a very long time.
You know, Tommy, yesterday in interviews at his home in Alpine, Utah, Chaffetz talked a bit about his legacy. So he's stepping down on June 30th. He was asked about his regrets and some of the things that he was most proud of during his tenure in D.C. What did he have to say?
Because I don't know if Chaffetz can do an interview without saying the word Benghazi, but that was one of the things he mentioned yesterday, noting that he really wishes he could have finished some of these investigations, Fast and Furious, some of the stuff in the Benghazi, and specifically he said that he wished he could see through the continuing probe of Hillary Clinton and her emails. He has plenty of things that he started, including some of this recent stuff with James Comey that he wanted to see all the way through. But then he was very clear that he's not the only one who could do this. You know, there will be others who can, you know, continue to carry the baton.
Is there, maybe this is a question for Michelle Quist, I don't know, is there a sort of obvious Chaffetz legacy from the perspective of people looking in from the outside, what he's done? Hard question.
Well, there's a glaring lack of what he's done is the problem. He, you know, his letter didn't list any accomplishments like, you know, statutory accomplishments or bills that he's passed. It was just these investigations that he started and he didn't finish.
And that was what he said on the regret side, essentially, was that I didn't get to finish these investigations. But he's, I mean, that's self-imposed, the fact that he's stepping out a year and some early to be done with this term. Tommy, maybe. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I should say more.
It wasn't even a question. Tommy, it wasn't even a question. It was just sort of a statement, and maybe we'll leave it there. Do we know? We're not 100% certain what Chaffetz is going to do after this, right? But there are some strong suspicions about where he might be headed, right? Tommy.
He's been very clear. I think it's like there's like a TV gig in his future. He won't say specifically, but we think it's a Fox News gig. I don't think it's going to be the kind of Bill O'Reilly show kind of time slot. May just be a commentary thing. But, you know, he'll be, you know, making a little money appearing on TV because I don't know how he can live without being on TV every once in a while.
This is sort of a silly last question, but and then we're going to have to take another break. But Chaffetz kind of prided himself on a sort of prop that he had in his office in D.C. This is the cot that he slept on. Tommy, what's going to happen with the cot? Is it going to the National Archives, the DI? Where's it headed to?
You know, I'm sure the Smithsonian is really going to look forward to getting that cot. No, I'm going to guess it's going in the dumpster outside the Rayburn building.
Okay, right. Well, guys, we do need to take another quick break here on the show, but stick around. Still to come, a look at John Huntsman Jr.'s promised but languishing appointment to be ambassador to Russia. That's just ahead on Behind the Headlines coming up after the break. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW Public Radio, and I'm joined by the Salt Lake Tribune's Thomas Burr, Dan Harry, and Michelle Quist. Listeners, you can join us with your comments and questions by calling 801-355-TALK or commenting at sltrib.com or on KCPW's Facebook page. And before the break, we were talking about Jason Chaffetz, his departure from Congress coming at the end of June. And at the outset of the show, I mentioned that Chaffetz has long-term, you know, we think that Chaffetz has long-term political aspirations. He has hinted at this. We did, Tommy Burr, we mentioned that he might have a TV deal in the works, but we haven't kind of addressed where he might go politically after this and what kind of ground game he's laying for that.
Said that he's not going to run for anything in 2018. So that means, you know, he wasn't going to run for the House seat again. He wasn't going to challenge Senator Orrin Hatch or run for that seat if Hatch doesn't run. But he's made it very clear that he's leaving open the option of running in 2020, and that would be for governor. And that will be an interesting race because I think we've already seen there's interest in Josh Romney. There's interest in, you know, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. If Chaffetz jumps in, it could be one, you know, hell of a battle. He's also registered several of the names. So we're still, you know, they're still unclear if he wants to run for president someday because he's registered, you know, that URL.
Right.
He didn't rule that out yesterday in talking to reporters.
And is that, I mean, he sort of says that that's just covering bases and being, you know, available to just in case that happens down the line. But so governor is a likelihood maybe in his future. A TV gig might play well into his trying to stay in front of people for you know, a future run for governor.
Absolutely, that's one thing. He doesn't want to go and just fade into, you know, the night and never be seen again. So having something, being on TV, being able to, you know, comment on what's going on without any actual, you know, actual power to do something about it, is a pretty nice position to be in. Also, it it pays pretty well.
There's sort of a history of Jason Chaffetz has a sort of reputation of kind of trading up, right? So making his way through political, making some, not cutthroat, but some difficult deals to advance his own career. Is this stepping down just part of that same narrative? And maybe this is a question for Michelle Quist, as a matter of fact.
Well, whether it is or not, it would have been better if he would have fulfilled his term. I mean, Utahns elected him for 2 years, and we trusted him to... to keep that trust to keep the office. And now we're going through great expense and political difficulty with filling the vacancy.
Dan Harry, political calculus.
I think you nailed that perfectly. I mean, this is a fellow who his entire political career, his public career, has traded up. Absolutely. He sees opportunities and he acts on them, and he realizes that you have to jump through these windows of opportunity. We saw it when he joined first the John Huntsman gubernatorial campaign in a lower level position. They got rid of their first campaign manager. He moved up. He took over. He became the governor's chief of staff. He left that job under, not the most ideal circumstances. But then he recognized not too many years after that that Chris Cannon was very vulnerable. In the 3rd Congressional District, and Jason sort of came out of nowhere and won that seat. And he could have held on to that as long as he wanted. Now, he wins re-election in November by a landslide, probably his biggest margin ever, I believe. And this is just a few months after that, and now he's all of a sudden decided he's had too much in Washington. No, that's not a realistic assessment. I mean, the difference was when he was running for re-election, Hillary Clinton looked like she was going to be the next president, and that would have kept Jason Chaffetz in chips for the next 2 years easily. I mean, he would have been in the prime position to just continually go after the president. But that didn't happen. We were all kind of surprised by what happened on election night, and it put him in a totally different position, not a good one for his future. So getting out was, that's a smart thing to do.
And just sort of the nature of politics, though, as well. I mean, our system encourages this. You seize the moment while you can. You got the spotlight, and you seize it. And so if you're going to make these decisions, is there anything to be done to change the nature of government to sort of change that political calculus that's happening? Anybody want to comment on that?
Well, I think it's the people that are involved, right? It's what they're there for. If you get people that are there to, feel like they really want to accomplish something, then I think you're going to see a different kind of political games. But these are the people we elect.
Okay, Michelle?
Yeah, voters.
I have to point out.
Tommy,
go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
Voters need to be more discerning. They need to, we need to vote in candidates with substance and ethics.
Michelle Quist from the Tribune editorial board gets to say everything that she wants to. Tommy Burr, what were you about to say?
Thanks. I was just going to point out a little bit of irony here. It was Jason Chaffetz who released James Comey's letter to the media right before the election that some have blamed for low turnout that eventually cost Clinton the presidency and elected Trump. So there's a little irony here that Chaffetz would have been in a really prime spot to investigate Clinton had maybe he not released a letter from the FBI director right before the election.
All right, so that's an interesting sort of almost parallel or divergent narrative, in that might be seen as something that is torpedoing his own chances because he sees a sort of ethical problem there. It's been a kind of DC heavy news week, and Thomas Burr, Salt Lake Tribune Washington bureau chief, you've been filling us in this whole hour, and we're still not done yet with the stories out of DC. It's another story that you covered from this past week. It has to do with another Utah political figure, former Governor John Huntsman Jr., former ambassador as well, I should say. The Tribune broke the news about 2 months ago, maybe more than 2 months ago now, that Huntsman Jr. had been tapped by Trump and had agreed to be ambassador to Russia. We haven't seen a formal nomination yet, I don't think, and we're still waiting for that. Why? I mean, what in the world might be muddling this appointment, Tommy?
Well, I think we have a few things playing State House is incredibly behind on nominating anyone. There's, you know, 500-600 positions that they need to have Senate confirmed, and they've only done like 40. There's a lot of ambassadorships that have not been filled at all. And in some ways, people will say that's a good thing because the career diplomats are very good about doing their jobs. But in this case, the U.S. ambassador to Russia is a very key position. And Huntsman has submitted all of his paperwork to the White House, fitness and everything, the financial stuff. So he's submitted all that stuff, but it's not really apparently on their radar. I've been trying to, you know, get something from the White House. When I talked to a senior White House official a couple weeks ago, you know, he said, no, there's no problem. You know, it just takes time to vet people. So it could be one, they want to make sure that they're doing their vetting better this time since the whole Michael Flynn situation popped up. And two, this whole Russia cloud hanging over the White House, it'd be very hard to have a Senate confirmation hearing in the middle of all this where the senators, especially the Democrats, would just use this as an opportunity to, you know, just throw up a bunch of questions about Trump and his associates' ties to Russia.
Tommy, they might be waiting forever, though, if they're going to try and wait till they're not in the middle of something to do with Russia. What does Huntsman say about this? He's kind of staying mum on this, right?
Yeah, and that's pretty common. I think, you know, most if you're nominated for a position, you don't talk to the news media until you're confirmed, just because you don't want to torpedo your own chances. But as far as we know, he's, you know, still gung-ho and ready to take the position. And you're right, it could take a while. We don't really know. It could be later this summer, maybe in the middle of summer when people aren't paying as much attention. But could you imagine a hearing next week with all this Russia stuff swirling around? It would be the most horrible timing.
Well, some explanations as to why this is being delayed. I mean, again, the fact that we're in the midst of this is a big one. But also, there's a suggestion that Huntsman might be rethinking his appointment, given what's happening at the White House. Things have taken a turn since his appointment, though they were already pretty, interesting at the time that he received the or agreed to this, Tommy.
So we have no indication that he's getting cold feet. There's maybe some trust speculation there, but as far as we know, he's still, you know, submitting all the paperwork and going through the, jumping all the hoops to get the position. So as far as we know, he's still wanting to do it. But again, this White House is jumping from crisis to crisis, and it's maybe not even on the radar right now to worry about getting an ambassador to Moscow.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the article that you wrote, that you spoke with a political scientist who said that, yeah, conceivably this just entirely dropped off their radar, and they almost as though they had forgotten about the appointment. Is that really a possibility, Tommy?
You know, it literally sounds like, you know, one, vetting does take time. Huntsman travels a lot internationally, and there's a form called FR-86 that he has to fill out, you know, very specific. When were you traveling? Where did you go? You know, dates here and there. Literally go through your passport and write all those things down. So that does take time. He has to go into the State Department and do, like, you know, a physical and all those kind of things. But then there's seriously just the matter of this White House is trying to just stay above the water every day, it seems, and this is not a priority.
Okay. Maybe I'll turn to Michelle Quist. John Huntsman Jr. Could have one of the most important positions in this administration, assuming the administration, you know, weathers the storm that it's going through, and that might be it's just an assumption. But given what's happening in D.C., should John Huntsman Jr. be reconsidering or rethinking this appointment?
Well, we actually haven't opined on this issue.
As the Tribune, okay.
Right. But personally, I would think that at the very least, he would be hoping for a quick resolution of the special investigations and a support of that investigation by the special prosecutor. And I think he would be able to do a lot of good on the issues that are out there. If it were me, I might be wanting to be ambassador under a Pence administration instead.
Or, you know, to somewhere in the Caribbean. I don't know.
Right.
Tommy, is there any kind of deadline, statute of limitations on appointments? And we know that there's a backlog, as you mentioned, and that some of that could be because of the fact that, the Trump White House isn't exactly doesn't know how to do government. This is what they, you know, this is almost what they prided themselves on as they came into the White House. They were outsiders. But is there any kind of delay on on this? Or deadline, sorry, deadline on this, Tommy.
Trump has always said he wants to drain the swamp. Apparently, that starts with not appointing people to positions for a little while. There is no deadline necessarily. So, again, they haven't formally nominated Huntsman or many other ambassadors. I think we really got what Branstad from Iowa to China, a couple others that have been named, but really very few that actually have come out. So there's really no deadline. He can wait as long as he wants. You know, the deputy consul, I'm sure, in Moscow right now is heading the embassy. And they, like I say, the professional diplomats can handle this for a while. Although the problem becomes if you don't have somebody appointed in your administration who is a political appointee, your agenda may not be the one going forward because you have a career person doing it instead of somebody you've handpicked.
An interesting point. Again, I want to remind listeners to call us with your thoughts on the stories from this past week that we're covering on this Friday morning news roundup. The number to call, 801-355-TALK. And speaking of that, we actually have a caller on the line, Bernadette, who is actually calling about a story we were speaking about earlier. This is Jason Chaffetz and his departure from Congress. And Bernadette, what's your question?
Actually, it's threefold. One, is he just jumping ship, or is it because it's sinking?
Okay.
Could he also be in trouble? And if the common denominator seems to be Russia, does Jason Chaffetz have any Russia connections? And lastly, there was Clint Watts' testimony that I was just introduced to, and it seems quite incriminating. So I'm wondering about those three, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Bernadette. And maybe we'll start with the beginning of that. Is I don't know who wants to address this, Tommy Burr is, or Dan Harry, is Jason Chaffetz in any trouble himself? Is there any hint at that?
You know, there have been questions raised about that by Politico and others, but we know of nothing that, no scandals, nothing that was about to come out about Jason Chaffetz. So I think that's just kind of the usual political speculation. Nothing that we've ever seen that has been substantiated or, bleeds us to believe that that's true.
And then Tommy Burr, I don't think I'm totally read in on the testimony by former FBI Special Agent Clint Watts. Are you familiar with what Bernadette was talking about there?
Not actually. I couldn't really hear her, but I'm not sure what she was referring to. I'm sorry.
We should have kept her on the line. She was saying that there was some testimony from a former FBI special agent who I don't know what I'll have to look into it. We'll get back to you, Bernadette. We'll get back to you on the show next week on that one and see how we do. But thank you very much for your call again, listeners. We appreciate your questions and comments. You can do that at sltrib.com, at KCPW's Facebook page, or by calling us at 801-355-8255. So we don't know what's in the cards with Huntsman's appointment. We'll keep waiting, and Tommy will await your reporting to let us know whether or not he gets a confirmation hearing, which is bound to be an interesting thing to watch. Some must-see C-SPAN.
Must-see C-SPAN. First time that's ever been said.
I had to, yeah, right. Exactly. Guys, we are coming up on the end of the show, and I think that we should turn now to our underplayed stories of the week. This is essentially when we look at stories that maybe didn't get the play that they deserved. And Dan Harry, government editor, are you ready with an underplayed story?
I've got one, yes. We had interim legislative committees this week, and one of the interesting things that came out that all the criticism directed at our new drunken driving law, which makes us the toughest in the nation at 0.05% blood alcohol content is the new standard, is that there was a special little standard in there for immigrants. And no one said they knew about this except the sponsor knew about it. He kind of buried it in the bill there, which said that for 2 years, somebody that was an immigrant and had gotten a new driver's license in Utah was under the not a drop standard that now is applied to those under 21, the legal drinking age. And, there's really some questions about constitutional treatment and equal treatment under the law that you would subject, grown adult immigrants to this very different standard.
Well, and this has to do with the definition of novice drivers. I read this in the article, and how you define a novice driver. Essentially, anybody who has a new driver's license would be prohibited from having a drop of alcohol. But the definition of novice driver in this bill included these immigrants.
Right.
Is anybody challenging that? I mean, is there a legal challenge?
Well, I think the legislature itself is saying, hey, this is a problem. We didn't know that was in there. We need to we need to fix this.
Okay. Dan Harry's pick for Underplayed Story of the Week. You can read it at sltrib.com. Michelle Quist, Tribune editorial writer, have you got an underplayed story for us?
I think we should have made a bigger deal about the stories about the salary increases for teachers. This state has always had issues with its education funding, and we need more funding. And part of our, you know, funding problems result in attraction of teachers. And this is going to help, you know, part of those issues. And I think it's a good thing.
All right. And this is a story that Salt Lake Tribune education reporter Benjamin Wood wrote. You can check it out also at sltrib.com. Thomas Burr, what is your pick for Underplayed Story of the Week?
You know, with all this attention on the White House, I think we probably overlooked the idea that there was another fence jumper this week. At first, we weren't sure which way. Maybe Sean Spicer is making a run for it. But actually, it turns out it was, you know, some stupid tourist trying to go too far towards the White House. I also just want to mention that the president's leaving today to start an 8-day trip overseas, his first foreign trip. And the first place he's going is Saudi Arabia.
And also going to the G8 summit, lots to see, and we'll be curious to see how that trip goes and plays out. And Tommy, we'll look for your stories on that as well. For my part, I'm going to go with, the discovery of a supernova by a Utah astronomer. This is Patrick Wiggins. He was looking at the fireworks galaxy one evening, and he noticed a spot that had not been there before. It hadn't been in the night sky just a couple of evenings earlier. And what he was seeing was the explosion of a star, a supernova. It's the third supernova that he's discovered peering through his telescope out at his home outside of Tooele. And it's pretty amazing stuff. The Tribune covered it. Again, you can check it out at the Tribune's website, sltrib.com. Dan Harry, Thomas Burr, and Michelle Quist, all with the Salt Lake Tribune, thank you very much for joining us on the program today. And Michelle, after this debut, we hope that you'll make your way back here again.
Thanks.
We will wrap up today with Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. Today, Kirby talks about warning his granddaughter away from being a police officer. Robert Kirby, you have a granddaughter who is showing a little too much interest in a profession you really wish that she'd shy away from, and that is the profession of police officer. First off, what are the signs that she's exhibiting that show that she's kind of interested in this profession?
Well, first, let me just say that there are a lot of police officers in my family.
Right.
Myself, all my brothers, nephews, my father.
Yeah.
So law enforcement is kind of a genetic disorder for us, I guess you could say. But after I left police work and got involved in building the law enforcement memorial at the state capitol.
And this is the memorial to the officers who have fallen.
Right, who've been killed in the line of duty. My daughter got involved, and she's on the board of directors too. And so her daughter, my granddaughter, started coming, and now she's intensely interested in police work. And she watches all the police shows. And you have this beautiful little girl, 10 years old, who's going around talking like a police officer. Where are the suspects now? Oh, and she watches police shows like Cops. What she wants for her birthday is all the seasons of Cops on, you know, CDs.
Okay, so you mentioned that the genetic disorder, that part of this is that the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. You, your brothers, your father even, involved in law enforcement work. But this is something that you don't want to encourage. In your column, you say that this is something you'd rather your granddaughter kind of turn away from, and why shouldn't she be a cop, Robert?
Well, it is a worthwhile profession. Don't get me wrong on that. I'm glad we have police officers out there and people who keep other people from crawling in our windows at night or whatever. But I also recognize it's a job that takes a toll on a person. And one of the things it does is it can desensitize people. Not can, it actually does. You get used to seeing some pretty horrible things. And I didn't want that to be part of my granddaughter's life, who I consider to be a princess. And it just kind of worried me that she'd be out, you know, fighting drunks in the middle of the street some night.
You want the best for her. Is there anything, though, to be done to guide your granddaughter away from police work? Or would any effort on your part or the part of, you know, her parents, for example, just push her further in the direction that you don't want her to go?
Well, it didn't work for my dad, and it didn't work for my brothers, whose sons became police officers. So probably no. People are going to do what they want. And I'm hoping that somewhere along the line she'll decide to be a biologist or, you know.
Something different.
Yeah, something where she doesn't stand a chance of getting shot.
That's Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby to end this edition of Behind the Headlines. You can find all of his opinions, the full Kirby archives, at the Salt Lake Tribune's website, sltrib.com. That does it for this edition of the show. Thanks very much to Jesse Ellis here at KCPW, to Tom Williams, Connor Rivers, and Krista Black at Utah Public Radio. Also to the show's producer, Emily Means. And thanks to you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of this program at our website, kcpw.org, or however you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook. We are at KCPW-FM. On Twitter, you can find us. We are at KCPW. Coming up next here on KCPW, we've got a look at the greening of the economy by Climate One. It's part of KCPW Presents, an hour of curated documentary that we air every Friday morning at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. here on the station. And again, you've been listening to Behind the Headlines, the Salt Lake Tribune Reporter News Roundup, heard on KCPW and around the state on Utah Public Radio. Join us next week for another look at the week's top stories. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks again for joining us, and have a wonderful weekend.